Alrighty, we are set and ready to roll. Jed, is that you rolling back in?
Yep, I'm here.
Beautiful. We are set for our Media Biz Power Hour educational teleseminar. We are delighted that all of you are here with us, and we have lots and lots of ground to cover. This is our 217th educational program going back to 1995. Over the last 19 years, every month, we make it easy for you to come in to listen to an educational program, to gain more tools, resources, and certainly opportunities to win in terms of your ad sales, whether we're talking about print ads, your e-newsletter ads, or your website ads. As always, we also keep our educational programs very simple because that's the coach approach. All you need is just your phone to dial in, and the more notes you make and the more notes you take, the more that you will get from this program. So we keep it very, very simple for you, which means that as you're making notes, we're infusing the knowledge to you, and that really is our goal. We're also more than happy to field any of your questions. Just simply hit reply to the confirmation that brought you here, or send an email to Ernest, E-R-N-E-S-T, at powerhour.com, and my team and our team behind the scenes, we'll filter those questions and weave them in here today. Jed is with me from MediaBiz, the founder and the CEO, and he's going to be sharing some powerful information about print ads and ad success stories. But before we do that, Jed, I always love some opening words from you about MediaBiz, what's cooking. I'll say a few words about Power Hour, and then we're going to dive into print ad success stories. So what's cooking around MediaBiz?
You know, it's we're rolling forward. We MediaBiz has been around for about 14 years, and we work with about 17,000 different publications use us. 11,000 publications, 17,000 advertisers. And what we do is we basically try to get print ad sales for publications. We've got a variety of different ways that we do it, but it all sort of boils down to driving revenue for primarily the print versions of publications around the country and in Canada. We'd love to talk to you more about what we can do and how we can help. It doesn't cost anything to use MediaBiz, it's the kind of thing where you can get in front of advertisers that may not otherwise have really known your publication existed, and probably aren't used to buying in the one-off type of way that that many publications rely on. So it's a good way to make yourself visible and to open yourself up to some regional and national advertisers.
Mm-hmm. Beautiful.
And I also want to thank mm-hmm. Ernest, although I'm probably going to be doing most of the talking today. Ernest does a great job with these teleseminars. I encourage you to listen to previous teleseminars that he's done. He's got a huge amount of knowledge when it comes to print ad sales and the whole print industry. He has a lot of great services to offer.
Well, thank you, Jen. I really appreciate that. It's always a pleasure working with you and your team. Thank you so much for the support, the educational programs we put on, and the hosting of them on your website. And to each of you and all of you, for those of you who are working with Jed and MediaBiz, you already know the services they provide, the wonderful support, and the revenue opportunities. And if you haven't had the opportunity, we encourage you to go to MediaBiz.com and learn more about the work that they're doing. My name is Ernest Orienti. My company is Power Hour. I began in the advertising sales industry way back, 1986, launched three of my own publications and was a leader for a $1 billion media group. We launched Power Hour in 1995, and we've coached more than 2,000 advertising sales leaders and their companies and their teams in 11 time zones around the world over the last 19 years, much like we're working here by conference call. We provide executive coaching, which simply means that our clients, Jed, who want to play big, who want to be successful in all that they're doing, those are the ones that we work with. They come to us with what's possible. We stretch to what's impossible. And frankly, the hotter the kitchen, the more that we love it, the bigger the opportunities, the bigger the challenges. It's Fantastic. We also have an investment banking group, Jed, which you know. We help our clients buy and sell media groups and publications. And on the LinkedIn space, we do LinkedIn expert training. We now crossed, Jed, last night, more than 90,000 readers. We're now one of the 70th largest newspapers if measured by daily circulation. Okay, 33 million is our annual impact. And for those of you that are on LinkedIn and get it, then you know the power of LinkedIn. It's the greatest selling and marketing opportunity that we've ever seen in 30 years of being around sales. But on the flip side, the power of running groups, owning groups, and managing groups is a golden opportunity for your team. And if you've ever would like expertise and insight in terms of how to do that, with nearly 2 million groups on LinkedIn, we are number 181 as of last night. Lastly, every Tuesday we have an Advertising Sales Academy. Come join us. We work on strategies about your advertising sales success. The only difference is it's open mic, meaning the line is like this, but we interact and field your questions topic by topic every single Tuesday. Come join us. Jed, we're going to be talking today about a topic near and dear for you and for me. We're going to be talking about print ad success stories. And, of course, the counterpart to that is, I know we scratch our head, is print dead. And I know every time we hear that, we're just looking at print stats that shows we're up every single year of new magazine titles for the last 5 years. This conversation, this piece about is print dead, we're here to talk about the success stories, and I know you're going to be sharing about the wonderful success that you experienced for your advertisers and how well it worked. So let's get started with this first point, and let's talk about some successful print ad campaigns, and let's talk a little bit about ad sizes, the comparison of color versus black and white, what the offer, the impact of the offer itself, what's working, what's not. Let's get started here.
All right, sounds good. So just to put this in context, where a lot of my information comes from is from the tracking that we do of different ads. And the way we primarily track is by putting a unique phone number into an ad. And what this good does is it gives us some information about what each individual ad is producing and what an ad produces for publications, as well as, for the advertiser. We're able to then see, what size ads do well, what publications do well, when they do well, and then we're able to sort of steer our clients in the right direction because, ultimately, print and any advertising is about sort of getting results. And one of the ways that we've really grown over the past few years is by taking a lot of the results metrics that are readily available online and making them available to print customers. And as a result, we've been able to drive millions of dollars back into print from advertisers that have over the past 5-10 years really shied away from print because they're advertisers that have really gone the way of only wanting to advertise in places where they could sort of have an easy way of measuring the results of each ad that they placed. So a lot of the stats we're going to talk about today came from 2013. We tracked a total of 31,970 individual ads, which appeared in about 11,000 print publications. Based on the multiple insertions of those same ads, it comes out to about 280,000 individual print ad insertions. So 31,000 different ads that appeared 280,000 times. Of those 280,000 ads, about 95%, 266,000 were tracked. So we have information on the ads on those 266,000 ads. As I mentioned, when I say tracked, there's really sort of three ways that we do it. Phone numbers, which is by far the most common and most effective, and we can talk a little bit more about that later. But there's also unique URLs, or a unique code that's put into an ad, and also QR codes, which are really cool, but a lot of people just don't really use them that much. they're fun.
Mm-hmm.
They're fun when they work, but it seems as though the most normal response mechanism for someone reading a newspaper or magazine still tends to be the phone, which is not necessarily a bad thing. So in 2013, based on the phone numbers that we placed in the ads, the ads that we placed generated about 1.4 million phone calls, just over that. And that was up from 2012, where we had about 230,000 phone calls. So during this period, during year over year, 2013 to 2012, the number of unique ads that we placed was up. So from about 20,000 to just over 30,000. But even if you sort of account for that increase in the total number of ads, the amount of phone calls that we received was about a 546% increase. So that just shows that, people are not afraid to respond to print by picking up the phone, regardless of the fact that they might be reading a print publication and their computer is, an arm's length away. Picking up the phone is still sort of a common method of response for a pretty large segment of the population out there. And that's a really big success story for print is that more people responded in 2013 than 2012. And our ads are obviously a small subset of the total ads out there, but it shows sort of a general willingness of the population to respond, to respond directly to a print ad, regardless of the fact that they have so many other methods of response available to them.
Mm-hmm. So Jed, we're talking about a significant. When you talk about 500% increase in calls in 2013 versus 2012. Again,
right.
We're just settling into this kind of data, but this is a huge uptick year over year. Correct.
Yeah, it is, and some of it, we'll get to later on, but some of it is a result of us being more effective with the advertisers that we're placing and where we're placing them. Learning a little bit more about which types of publications are going to generate results for which types of advertisers, and it's not really. Always as scientific as you'd like it to be. there's degrees of uncertainty, and so what we generally try to do is again, most of our advertisers are sort of primarily online advertisers, and they like the measurement that we provide them, and so what we do is once we find something that works, we essentially just try to replicate it as many times as we can. So if we find a women's magazine is working for a specific advertiser, we'll just try to find lots more women's magazines that will work just as well. And not all of them will, but a certain percentage of them will. And so as long as we can sort of keep providing good phone calls, they will increase their budget exponentially. It's just really a matter of sort of driving customers.
So tell us a little bit about, and again doing some comparisons, tell us a little bit about how many calls per ad. What are some of the stats that you're seeing from the ads that you're placing?
Sure. So on average, each ad that we placed in in 2013 generated 46.5 calls. Now that's per, you know, per individual ad. Now if you sort of factor out all of the insertions, each ad each time the ad appeared, it generated about 5.5 phone calls. And this is over a wide variety of products. Some are extremely expensive products, others that maybe aren't as likely to get a high volume of phone calls, and it's also over you know, many products that are likely to generate a large volume of phone calls. So it's you know, take it for what it's worth, but I think, you know, what it shows is that, you know, most ads that appear we're getting a decent response to. In 2012, we got 11.5 phone calls per ad placed versus the 46 that we got in 2013. So the amount of response that we received per ad placed, you know, went up dramatically from 2012 to 2013. You know, again, this is sort of, you know, I think an indicator of the fact that, you know, that consumers are willing to respond to print products. You know, they're willing to pick up the phone and make a phone call. So in 2013, the average ad that we placed generated significantly more phone calls than it did in 2012. You know, despite the fact that, again, you know, the sort of industry line is that, you know, more and more people are reading these, you know, reading publications online, more and more people are getting their getting information online, there's still a very devoted and very large, you know, print audience out there that that is, you know, extremely desirable.
Mm-hmm. And of course, your results and the stats are validating that. And as each of you are listening to Jed, think about the stats that you have available. How do they compare? Think about when Jed talks about the average number of phone calls, you know, what kind of data do you have related to that? How do you present that to advertisers? Can you measure the inbound phone activity for every single advertiser that you have in your print publication? What about those advertising on your newsletter or your website? How are you tracking? And we're going to be doing more work around this during the course of our program here today, but just a little something to get you sort of thinking about that. So, Jed, where to next in your opening points here about successful ad sizes?
Sure, yeah, just to sort of, you know, follow up with what you just said, you know, what most of the advertisers that we deal with, because they tend to be larger sort of national or regional advertisers, are sending the phone calls that we're generating are going to call centers. And obviously on a local or even regional level, there's a lot of businesses, a lot of really good businesses that don't have, you know, 24-hour, 7-day-a-week call centers. There's just no reason for it, right? But even with that as a handicap, you can still track the results that are being generated from a lot of the ads that are being placed in your publications, and still get some really valuable data out of it. So, the fact that we're dealing with, you know, a certain type of customer, and a lot of the data we're talking about comes from those types of sort of, you know, national, regional, direct response type advertisers, doesn't mean that the same type of information isn't just as relevant for, you know, restaurants or dry cleaners or, you know, could be anything. You know, it's going to be a little bit different, and the way it's captured might not end up being quite as exact, but it's still very relevant, and it's still, you know, the kind of thing where you can really use it to your advantage. So you know, one of the things that we always look at is, you know, is why the heck does one ad do better than another one? Why does one publication do better than another one? Why does, you know, why does an ad that appears, you know, today in one publication do better than an ad that appears tomorrow in a different publication, right? Because we're always trying to maximize the response that we receive. We're always trying to understand what it is that is really what factors go into go into success. And so, you know, when we look at all the numbers, you know, it appears like the order of importance, right, when it comes to a successful ad is the offer in the ad, right? What's actually being advertised? The relevancy of the ad in terms of is that product sort of needed by the audience, by the readership? The size of the ad would be third place. Somewhat surprisingly, the day of the week that the ad appears seems to make a relatively large difference, and also whether or not it's black and white in color. But that's sort of the order of importance. So just to follow up with the offer in the ad. One of the things which I personally find sort of consistently amazing is that consumers appear to really shop around when it comes to products and services of all type. So if an ad that you have in your publication that you're hoping to generate good response for, if an ad has an inferior offer as a competitor or as an ad that is appearing from the same advertiser, you know, in a different medium, odds are that's going to dramatically hurt results, which I, as a consumer, again, find sort of astounding because I do not shop around in that way. But to give you an example, and I've used this example before. It happened in late in 2012. But Dish Network changed the price of their monthly subscription fee from $19.99 to $24.99. Now they did this across the board in all advertising in all mediums. But within a 1 month period, we went from generating about 11,000 phone calls a month for them down to about 5. So there was about a 50% drop in the number of people who responded to an ad just based on that $5 a month charge that they, you know, that $5 a month increase. I find this to be particularly amazing only because the $24.99 that they're charging is still less than most cable companies, and it's dramatically less than their main competitor, DirecTV, which at the time I think was $29.99, but it was also $29.99, but you had to sign up for 18 months minimum, and there were a few other catches in there, so it ended up being more expensive. So anyway, my point is, right, that $5 made an enormous difference to Dish Network, which I never would have predicted. We've seen the same thing with other customers as well. Pro Flowers, which is another client of ours, their response dropped about 25% when they had a better offer online. So in other words, they were running online ads that were advertising a 30% off deal. We were running ads that were featuring a 20% off deal. When they had that 30% off deal online, even though the online channels that they were using had nothing to do with print, and there were places like Yahoo, there were places like Banner Ad Networks, they weren't on any sort of print websites. But even as a result of that, our response dropped by about 25%, which you know, 5% on a $20 bouquet of flowers isn't a lot, but 10% on a $20 bouquet of flowers isn't a huge amount.
Right.
But
right.
Even so, it made a big difference in response. You know, so my point in all this is that you know, it makes an enormous difference what your what's being advertised. And I know that I know that many of you may be thinking to yourself, well, that's really sort of up to the advertiser, and the advertiser is really the one who's sort of driving that boat, and I really don't have a lot of control over it. And that is true to a large extent. However, I would say that and we'll get into this a little more later. But if you're talking to advertisers and they are measuring response and they do want response, then it is, it's entirely, it's much easier to then bring up the idea of providing an offer which is going to actually generate response. It's hard to generate a lot of response if the offer is something like, home improvements as an example. We recently ran a campaign for Home Depot, and really the only sort of incentive that they gave people to call was a free estimate, right? Which, free estimates just don't carry a lot of weight these days, right? In fact, it's hard to imagine an estimate not being free. So they ran a free estimate offer. Recently we've also run offers for Sears, for Sears, similar types of home improvement products. But their offers tend to be much more, save $100 by calling before this date, that type of stuff. And for those ads, they do much, much better because it really gives the consumer some incentive and really gives the consumer a reason to wanna act. There's also the feeling that they're just getting a good deal.
Jed, let me just pause here for a second. When all of you are listening to the sensitivity of ad results, when Jed is talking about it, a difference in an advertiser like Dish Network having ad results fall by 50%. I mean, you have to just pause and say, holy smokes! I mean, and for Jed to know that, and for MediaBits to know that. As a massive advertiser that they are, you pause and say, hey, if Jed knows that in 30 days, what do I know about my advertisers, right? What do I know about my advertising success formula? What do I know every 30 days about how it compared to the prior 30 days? Where is my ad dashboard so I know what the impact and the results are? Because we're talking about something that's very hair trigger. I mean, we're talking about the fact that if you have a flower shop or a locksmith, or a law firm, or an RV dealer, or whatever it might be that you're working with, and you have, the results every 30 days, and you see an ad drop or plummet, how quickly are you responding? I mean, let's be real. Maybe you have a 12-month agreement in place, but that advertiser is going to see a real dip in their performance. Or the other way, you make recommendations, and it goes the other way, and it doubles in size. Instead of getting 10, it gets 20. Instead of 100, they get 200. That's a massive impact to the positive on the other side. So, we're talking about, real sensitivity. When you look at the RPM gauge, in your car, and you see that it jumps from 2,000 to 4,000 to 6,000 in red lines, you can both hear it and see it. But can you do the same with your advertisers? And what would the impact be? How much more successful will your ad sales be if you know specifically for your ad, your advertisers, exactly what drives it from 100 to 200, or that it went from 200 back to 100, and how quickly are you able to say those words to your advertisers? So, Jed, as always, these are real disruptive statements that you're making, and I just want to come around the bend and make certain our group that's listening here live, that also has questions about this, that they can interact with us and sort of take this all in. And remember, as always, you can just simply hit a reply to the confirmation that brought you here, or send an email to earnest@powerhour.com, and we'll filter these questions in. So, Jed, let's continue going forward here. Your statements and these stats are just way too big just not to insert a few words about what they mean, okay?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think it's probably fair to say, if it's true for Dish Network, right, it's probably also true for – you know, the guy who's advertising, a restaurant that's advertising, a breakfast special, right? If his breakfast special is $4 higher than another breakfast special out there that's being widely advertised and people know about, it's amazing how much that impacts response. You know, and Groupon, I think it's sort of worth noting, has sort of made a lot of businesses kind of realize that, it's worth it to give money off to get customers, right? And although sort of the business, the business rules around Groupon are different than they are around print advertising, the same general tenet is true, and that is that, if an advertiser is willing to give 50% off to attract customers from Groupon, maybe they should be willing to give, more than the same offer that they have, that they've been advertising for years to attract customers from print. It's a lot of advertisers who have begun to sort of think about their marketing as much more results-oriented, I think you're going to find are more likely to sort of go down that path than maybe they had been, a few years ago. I think the next thing that we wanted to mention was the relevancy. The relevancy of the ad is sort of a tricky one, and this is one that we're always sort of struggling with. It's pretty clear that sort of not all ads work in all publications. I think this is a mistake that some publications make when they're selling to advertisers, and this is one area where having some data can really, really help you, because it just isn't true that your publication is going to be equally as effective for sort of any advertiser you can imagine. You have a sweet spot. It's really just a matter of sort of defining it. The value of a publication, right, is to a large extent sort of, in the advertiser's eyes, sort of, in a large part sort of dictated by the relevancy of that publication and to what they're trying to sell. So for some advertisers who are selling, low-cost products, a very expensive publication might be worth, less. For other advertisers that are selling a high-price item, a low-cost publication might not be worth as much. It really sort of depends on what is going to be the most effective and what advertisers are going to be the most successful in your publication. And I'll give you sort of my big example. So on May 7th of 2013, we put half-page ads in four daily newspapers in New York City. This is about 5 days before Mother's Day 2013, and that's really sort of a big time for ProFlowers. So they do a lot of advertising around Valentine's Day and Mother's Day especially. So all the ads we put in these four daily newspapers were half pages. We placed ads in the New York Times, the New York Daily News, the New York Post, and Metro New York, which is almost like a commuter-free daily newspaper. All the ads were identical, obviously slightly different sizes just based on the different publication specifications, but they were all content-wise, offer-wise, everything was exactly the same. The New York Times has by far the biggest circulation, 1.5 million circulation. The Daily News is just over 500,000. New York Post is about 500,000, just under the Daily News. Metro New York is about 280,000. So based on that, you would think that the New York Times would have done, dramatically better than all the rest. But based on, because we had unique phone numbers in each of those ads, we're able to see that, exactly how much each ad produced. And so the New York Post got 124 calls from that ad. Metro New York got 129 calls from that ad. The New York Daily News got 633 calls from that ad. And the New York Times got 35 calls.
Wow.
Excuse me. from that.
Wow, what a spread.
I know, right?
Spread. So to clarify, we have CERC of roughly 300,000 versus 1.6 mil between the three sources, and we have a spread of 35 calls versus 363 calls, okay?
Yeah, actually, 633 calls. Yeah, right. I mean,
right?
You're right. You're talking about more of a 600 call difference, right, between the New York Times
it's more than an eyelash, right? More than a blink, the numbers.
and what's sort of equally crazy is, like, you know, the average person, you know, myself included, you know, I would say that the New York Times would be the better paper, right? It would be the, you know, it's, you know, it's more respected. I mean, it's, you know, and there's nothing wrong with the New York Daily News, but, you know, it's more of a tabloid. For those of you who haven't seen it, it's sort of more of a tabloid style, you know, back page is all about sports, front page is usually, you know, something crazy, and it's not nearly as, I don't know, refined as the New York Times, right? I mean, to add to that, right, the open column the open rate for a full page in the New York Times, you know, is about four times what it is in the New York Daily News. It's about $63,000 for the New York Times versus the New York Daily News is about $17,000. So given all this, right, I mean, the results that ProFlowers got from New York Times was really pretty shocking. But I think it probably speaks to the relevancy of that ad to that particular group. And really, you know, ProFlowers just did not speak to that group the way that it did in New York Daily News. Why that's the case, I'm really not sure. I mean, that's a part of the equation that I think is almost impossible to figure out. You know, what is it about readers of the New York Times that made them not want to buy ProFlowers? You know, you can make up theories, but it's difficult to sort of validate. My point in bringing this up is that, you know, The New York Times is certainly a great publication, right? And for a lot of advertisers, you know, if we were selling BMWs, right, versus inexpensive flowers, there's almost no doubt in my mind that the New York Times would do better than the New York Daily News. However, for that particular product, it is not the better option. And my point in bringing all this up is just that it's, you know, in your paper, in your publication, in your community, right? There's ways to be successful, and there's products that are probably going to be more successful with you than with other publications. It's really just a matter of sort of defining what they are, and then once you have the data, it sort of becomes fun because you can really go after advertisers that are looking for the same type of demographics.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you've got the demographics, you've got psychographics, you've got buying trends, you've got seasonality, you've got all these pieces, but it's some version of let's get real, right? Let's get real about the advertisers that we're working with, because if we don't, we're not going to get the kind of results that we're anticipating. But the only way to know those results, Jed, are the tracking mechanisms, which is an important part of what we're going to be sharing here today. But again, you know, when you talk about the kinds of stats that you're working with and the kinds of impacts of before and after and then side-by-side advertising mediums, it's very powerful. And for all of you, we're hoping that this causes you to stop in your tracks and disrupt your thinking, disrupt your sort of everyday biz. This is how we go out to the marketplace. This is how we sell our ads. This is how we keep and maintain it. But if you don't have this tracking piece inserted in here, then you don't have the kind of statistical data, and therefore you don't really know what's happening with the ad campaigns or not. So, Jed,
right.
Where to next related to this?
So the other thing that we look a lot at is how much the size of the ad impacts response. And there's a definite drop-off in sizes below a quarter page. There's about a 30% difference between a quarter page and an eighth of a page. But interestingly enough, there's only about a 10% difference between the results generated from the average quarter page versus the average half page. And then it's also about a 10% difference between the average half page and the average full page, which means that if you have an advertiser that is that has the money for one full page, you know, and you're measuring response, and response matters to that advertiser, then you're much better off doing four quarter pages than you are one full page. You're going to generate, you know, you're going to generate about, you know, dramatically more response from four quarter pages than you will from one full page. You know, that's just something we see sort of across many different types of publications. But one thing that's interesting, when you get below a quarter page in ad size, and especially when you get down into classifieds, the average call length and the ability of the advertiser to make a sale from the response that's generated drops off dramatically. So what I mean by that is, it seems, and it's really weird, but the smaller the ad, the less likely someone is to buy. So if you have a customer that's getting a lot of calls, but they're not getting a lot of sales, you know, that's the time maybe to make it a bigger ad with more information in the ad, and I think it sort of serves as a pre-qualifier. The ads that have the lowest close rate, which by that I mean the rate from caller to sale, tend to be classified ads, which have a dramatically lower call length, and also have a close rate which is much, much worse than display ads. For example, for Dish Network, classified ads that we run for them have a close rate, which is a caller to customer conversion rate, of about 12%, whereas display ads, especially, you know, the quarter page and above, have a close rate of 35%. So, and this is in the same paper. So it's the same people reading the ads, but the people who call from classifieds are about a third as likely to call and actually buy as people who read display ads, which I find really, really sort of, you know, amazing. The fact that, you know, there could be that big a difference within the same paper, with the characteristics of a caller who's calling from a classified versus a display ad, which might be only three pages away.
That's just amazing. There's that whole mindset, though, of what the displays ads tell you versus the classified. And I think you hit it on the head when you said, you know, it's the demographics and the mindset of someone who, you know, looks at the larger ads and the media ads, your prime and premium positions, you know, front of the magazine, the double truck spread, centerfold. But you get back to the classified, and it, you know, you can end up with all kinds of multi-level marketing, get rich quick, and then you get that wrapped around, even if you've got credible advertisers. But it kind of is a catch-all. You know, I don't know. Let's see, when I get to the back, I'm in Philadelphia today, Jed, and when I get back to the back of that, there's City Weekly, I go, let's see, I wonder what I'll find humorous as I get to the back section here, you know? So you do kind of shift gears as you kind of work your way through the publication. I'd never thought about that, but when you talk about the impact on the results, that's significant.
Yeah, it matters. Now, that's the downside of classifieds. You know, the upside of classified is they do generate, you know, a decent amount of response, and based on sort of if you look at ads based on kind of a response per column inch, I mean, classifieds outperform everything, you know, because they're essentially, you know, no space at all, mm-hmm. and yet they generate a lot of calls. So, I mean, one of the things that, you know, one of the things that, you know, publications can keep in mind, and we've done this with lots of publications, is putting in both a display ad and a classified. And what tends to happen there is that you'll get callers from the classified that you're not getting on the display ad, and vice versa. It's a pretty inexpensive way to sort of maximize the response for an advertiser.
Mm-hmm.
Within the same paper. Another thing which people might find interesting is response by days of the week. This seems to be a bigger factor than you would think. And for reasons that are not completely clear to me, Monday, Tuesdays, and Fridays are the days when more people respond to print ads than any others. Wednesdays, Thursdays, Saturdays, and Sundays are about 40% less, generate about 40% less than Mondays, Tuesdays, and Fridays. Tuesdays have a slight advantage over Mondays and Fridays, about 5%, but it's pretty close. And by far the worst day seems to be Wednesday. I'm not sure why. It's theories, but they don't amount to much. Color seems to make a difference for certain advertisers. When we advertise things that where color really shows off a product well, it makes an enormous difference. About 17% difference between color, the response for a color ad and a black and white ad for things like Pro Flowers or Omaha Steaks. And these are products where, in the case of Pro Flowers, obviously we're showing off a flower, or in the case of Omaha Steaks, we're showing off a steak, right? And so these are things where color kind of matters to the integrity of the product. For things like Dish Network, it really doesn't matter that much. Color is nice, but it certainly doesn't impact results the way that we would have expected. So it's really sort of depends on the product. And I know that color is something that a lot of publications these days sort of throw in. It's sort of built into the overall, the regular cost. And in some cases, it's harder to not get color than it is to get it. But it's something to keep in mind, especially, again, if you have that advertiser who is worried about response, if they're determining whether, they're better off running, three black and white ads versus, two color ads, they might be better off with the three black and white, because the difference in the amount of response that's generated is really not that great. Unless they're selling something where it really matters. But if it's just a picture of a guy selling insurance or something, I don't think it amounts to much.
Mm-hmm. Right. So, Jed, let's talk about this piece about defining ad success, and let's talk about how ROI is calculated, and what does this mean to the advertisers? What matters most?
Well, I mean, like our advertisers, like anyone else's, are worried about sales. I mean, ultimately, sales are what defines ROI. And when we talk about ROI, generally what we mean is return on investment. We mean the amount of money someone's going to get back from spending money with your publication for advertising. So if they spend $100, they want $100 back, right? That's the sort of a minimum goal, right? But if they can get more than that, they're even happier. One of the things that we make a real point of doing when we're speaking to advertisers and determining, sort of validating the cost of print to them, is that we really try to talk to them about the lifetime value of a customer, because when a customer is because if you're just going to look at response as sort of a one-time thing, by that what I mean is, if you're just going to look at response as, the amount of phone calls received from this ad on this day, right? It's a It's a proposition which can be difficult for print to win. What tends to happen with print is that the close rate tends to be higher. So in other words, more people who express initial interest end up buying a much higher percentage than other mediums. And the other thing that happens with print is those customers that do buy end up sticking around longer. They tend to be more educated about the product or service that's being offered, so they tend to be more likely to buy. For example, I use ProFlowers as an example, just because we get an enormous amount of information from them. But, you know, for ProFlowers, you know, they consider print customers to be more valuable than customers generated from any other medium, for the reasons I just stated. You know, they're more likely to make additional purchases, and they're more likely to make purchases over a longer period of time. Dish Network, you know, is the same thing. They value print customers more. They consider them to be more valuable than customers generated from any other medium. For them, it's primarily a result of those customers lasting longer. The average print customer, the average customer that comes to them from a print ad lasts about 18 months longer than customers generated from other mediums. And what that means to them is just, you know, an additional $300-$400 in revenue. The value to them is, you know, it's not just all about the initial response, right? But it's also about sort of who's responding. This is information which can be difficult to get sometimes, right? Because you're depending on your advertiser to sort of take it to the next step. But many advertisers have at least sort of an anecdotal kind of understanding of what happens to their customers, how many times they end up buying. So I would encourage you, if you're talking to public, to advertisers about response, to try to get them to acknowledge and to understand, right, that print customers tend to ultimately be more valuable than customers generated from other mediums. I think that as a result of that, you know, it becomes easier for print to compete with a lot of other, you know, especially online stuff, which is just super, super cheap, right? But it's also extremely low percentage leads. The percentage of conversions that most companies get from banner ads is less than 1%. You know, I know even from mobile ads that we've done, you know, even when we're trying to generate phone calls, I mean, it's just staggering how short and how poor the quality of phone calls are from mobile. TV and radio, you know, the average phone call tends to be about 1 minute long, whereas the average phone call from print tends to be about 4.5 minutes long. So the difference between a 4.5 minute phone call for an advertiser versus a 1 minute phone call is enormous, right? Because, I mean, a 4.5 minute conversation is a pretty long conversation. You can tell someone an awful lot about the goods or services that you're providing. You can also find out a lot about that customer. Right, so you can provide some follow up, and you can send out information, and you can, put their name, address, and phone number in your database. Right, all that stuff is very valuable to advertisers, and again, it's just not even comparable. I mean, print does a great job with that. So, I know that's true with for the advertisers that we're working with. But I suspect it's also true for the advertisers that, you know, every publication on this call is working with. The difference is that we just have the tracking mechanisms in place to be able to really be able to validate it.
You're absolutely right, Jed. And let's talk about that tracking piece, and let's tie in URLs and QR codes and phone numbers. Say some words about that, if you would.
So we've tried and continue to try just about every sort of tracking measurement tool that we can think of for print. URLs are generally something that advertisers get pretty excited about, because you can put a unique URL in a print ad, you can determine how, you know, who's going to that URL, and then you can also see what happens with that person once they get to the designated website. It's pretty easy technology, and it's something that, you know, a lot of companies do. I'm sure you see it a lot on late night TV. But in print anyway, it generally is relatively disappointing. We if we have a phone number and a URL in an ad, generally the URL will get about 1/6 the response, or about 16% of the response that the phone number will get. QR codes, which are the codes that look like tic-tac-toe boards and you can take a picture of and drives you to a website usually, or generates an automatic phone call in some cases, they do even worse. They generally are about 2% of the response that a phone number in the same ad will receive. So phone numbers appear really to be the best way, at least that we've come up with, to track a print ad. For those of you who've used unique 800 numbers, which is primarily what we use, they're easy to set up. They're transparent pass-throughs, so your client is getting the phone call at whatever phone number they want. They're also relatively inexpensive. Live phone calls for most advertisers are still sort of, you know, something which is highly valued. And again, I touched on it earlier, but, you know, our average call length over all of the phone calls we got in 2013 was about 4.5 minutes. The average phone call that we got during that same period for 4 minutes 28 seconds. Yeah. So the average phone call that we got on mobile campaigns during that same period was about 22 seconds, and the average in radio and TV is about a minute. So print is generating leads that outperforms other mediums. And again, it's a response that tends to be a little bit more considered. It tends to be a little bit more tends to be a customer that's more likely to become, you know, a long-term customer. And so as a result, you know, print should demand prices that aligns with that. But the trick is, and it becomes easier to sell those prices, right, when you're able to show an advertiser just how effective it's been.
You make a valid point related to that, and it really syncs this all together, and really the importance of the tracking component. So what else to share related to the tracking component? And I realize, Jed, how much we've covered over the last hour here, and as we just kind of come around the bend, is there a summary of what you'd like to share related to this tracking piece?
Yeah, I apologize. We didn't get to some of the points. Ernest is much better at keeping track of time than I am. But I guess if there's sort of one final statement in all this is that I think that there's a real opportunity for a lot of publications if you can talk to advertisers about response. Many advertisers have sort of shifted away from kind of the real estate approach where, you know, we're going to buy an ad, we're going to hope we get response, we're going to get our name out there, that sort of an attitude. And they've really sort of, you know, adopted the strategy where they only want to advertise where they can see and measure the results that they're generating. Print can play that game, and print can play it really effectively. But the difference is that you have to be the one, right? The print publication, the print industry, has to be the one to measure what these advertisers are generating and provide it to them, because they're not going to do it themselves, right? They're getting it sort of free of charge from all these other mediums. They really expect the medium that they're paying to be the one sort of telling them how they're doing. It's not that difficult to do, and it can yield some pretty big rewards.
Absolutely, and And Jed, you make such a great point on this. And there's also this piece about, you know, the data that's being collected. It's a reminder that the data is constantly changing. It's a reminder that we have to continue to gather and pull that data in and then track it and trend line it so we know what it means. And then, Jed, to your point, our advertisers do expect us to, you know, share with them that insight. We want to be out in front of it. Quick example, Jed, as you know, we do a lot of search engine work for our clients, and they see a report once a month. We see it weekly. The moment something changes on their weekly, we reach out. Hey, did something happen to your site? Is there something you altered? Did you add a video? Did you change your hosting company? Blah, 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 blah. And in fact, we learn things, and they appreciate that we're out in front, proactive, that we know faster than them that there's been an impact. Every 7 days, in fact, we know there's been an impact, and we let them know, thumbs up, thumbs down, even though they only see the results once a month. So there's that level of responsiveness that you're really talking about today, isn't it?
Right, absolutely. And it's not necessarily a bad thing, right, to be able to see firsthand before the advertiser even knows it that their ad is not doing well. You know, it's something that, you know, publications really fear, but it's a much nicer conversation to go to an advertiser and say ahead of time, hey, I see that your ad is not performing very well. You only got, you know, 2 phone calls from that ad that you ran yesterday. You know, what can we do differently? You know, let's try a different offer. Let's try to put it in a different part of the paper or magazine. Let's put, you know, let's see if we can, you know, maybe we'll change the size. Maybe we'll make it smaller. Maybe we'll make it bigger. There's lots and lots of things you can do. But having that conversation, at least for most advertisers, is something which is a lot more constructive than, you know, walking in there trying to get them to sign a new contract and having them say, you know, your ad stinks. I didn't get anything.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a much different way of selling.
Mm-hmm. It really is. And it's all about being proactive. It's all about measuring the results. And as we wrap up today's educational program, there's more than 60-plus hours of educational opportunities. Come into the MediaBid site. The next couple of days, we'll ping you to let you know that this one is up live, that you can come back and revisit and re-listen to it. Jed has packed in so much information. There's so much meat here. And if you have any follow-through questions about anything that we covered or any additional ideas that he shared, just pop a quick note over to me at ernest@powerhour.com. I'll either field and or share with Jed, depending on the question. We work in this space all day long. The importance of tracking, validating, statistical data, dashboarding, all of these pieces are key. Our advertisers are expecting from us, and we, being the best in our world, we want to deliver the very best for the advertisers. Jed, some closing words before we wrap up for today?
Yeah, if you have any questions on anything that, you know, that I brought up, please let me know. I know it was a little bit all over the place, but I was trying to cover as much as I could. So, I welcome follow-up questions, and thanks again to Ernest. Thanks for all of you who joined us, and look forward to next month.
Beautiful. Jed, thank you so much, and I promise you, you were not only all over the place, but you brought it together for us. So you had to go out to bring it in. There's no other way to describe what it is you do, and I'm always riveted by what you pull from the outside to bring it into our focused attention. We get the point. We appreciate it. And there's nowhere else in the world, you've heard me say this before, that you can come and listen to the kind of statistical data and the kind of advertising results. It doesn't exist. So thank you, as always, for all the prep. Always a pleasure working here together. To all of you, it's a delight. Please take a look at the MediaBid site in terms of all the work that they do. Please come over to our site, powerhour.com, and see the work that we do with advertising teams, and come join us for our Tuesday Advertising Sales Academy. Jed, it's a pleasure. We'll see you next month, okay?
Okay, thanks, everyone. Thank you, Ernest.